you sit in traffic now. But later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Deuce and Mo. They tell you what they know. Deuce and Mo. The podcast that you know.
A special edition of the Deuce and Mo podcast. We've been doing these Kings Roundtables. We got to get a couple of guys that we go way back with. People that I don't know if we were allowed to talk to you for a while. I don't know.
Hey,
but I'll tell you what.
Weren't allowed to.
Don't put that energy out there.
I'm just kidding.
Cease and desist would have happened, and we already know that.
But I feel like I hear their voices all the time because I literally listen to them every day. D'Lo and Casey from ESPN 1320 and KSFM 102.5 in Sacramento. They just worked an entire day today, and they're doing this after
their shows. I don't know. Why did you guys agree? Why did you say yes?
We love y'all, man.
Yeah, man. It's love. It's family right here, man. Come on now.
Did you guys hear the show today by any chance?
Wait, what?
I heard the later portion of the show today. I heard it was why because I was watching the game, and I heard after I saw the stuff on social that said, "Oh, this was the greatest thing ever." I'm like, "Oh, I got to go back and listen to what was going on."
Well, yeah, no, that was fun. We called you the Bob Backlund of
what?
Can someone explain this to me?
So Bob Backlund beat Bret Hart at the 95 Survivor Series, and 3 days later he got power bombed by Diesel at the Madison Square Garden and lost the championship. So he was the champion for like 3 days.
Okay,
so we're approaching our 1,000th episode of D'Lo and Casey. It's four plus years, and we were talking about, wow, will we get to 2,000? You know, could we? You know, that's like 8 years. Could we get to 8 years? And then, I don't know.
I think I said something like that would have been like Roman Reigns if we got to 8 years or something.
And I think said, will that make Deuce and Mo Bob Backlund? Okay.
Left after 3 months.
They went back to radio, and a couple months later just got powerbombed and left Madison.
It's funny, and no one knows it happened. It feels like it was like Men in Black. Yeah. It didn't happen. There's what are you talking about?
So many people are like, wait, yeah, you guys used to be on, right? Like 10 years ago? Yeah, that was when.
That was it.
That was actually something we were going to talk about with you guys, because this is a big month for you. I mean, we joke about this, but this business can get wild. We've all experienced it. Dude, 1,000 episodes.
Congrats.
Like, it's a big
Badass.
Deal. I don't know. Like, is it surprising at all to you? I mean, if you reflect back, I know you never go into something thinking, well, it's not going to work. But, like, just knowing how this business operates and you guys working together for the very first time 4 years ago, like, are you surprised? It's like, wow, this is still a thing, and it's bigger than ever.
Well, you know what, for me, like, it's evolved so much. It feels like Casey and I have had so many different shows. You know, this show started like it was a 2-hour show, and you guys would come on for like the final 40 minutes one day. You know what I mean? Like, if we were at home, like it was 2020, for God's sakes. Like, it was that was like one incarnation of the show. Then the show becomes 4 hours. Then we go to the studio. And then, you know, we start the KSFM stuff, then the insiders start. So it doesn't feel like it's just been one, you know, 4 year stretch of a show. It feels like it's been an evolution of a show over the last 4 years.
Yeah. I mean, for me, this was my first radio job, and we got the show, and I was like, oh yeah, we got a show. I'm gonna be here forever. You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't think nothing of it, especially like in a market like Sacramento where things have like changed here and there, but it's the same band of characters for the last 20 years. You know what I'm saying? So in my mind, I'm just like, I got in the club, so I'm gonna be here forever. And then you're in there and you kind of see like how the sausage is made, pause. You know what I mean? And you see everything that goes on. You see everything that goes on in the radio business. And after you see how everything goes down, you appreciate a whole lot more that we're coming up on 4 years and we're coming up on 1,000 shows. Dude. And I live by the motto of, man, I'm just going out here grinding, trying to treat every show like it's my first, because the second that you slip up, the second that you think you get comfortable, things can change in a heartbeat, man. So, you know, I'm just blessed, you know what I mean, to be working with a guy like D-Lo and to be able to be on here 4 years. And like I said, hopefully it's another 4 years.
Yeah, I'm so glad that that's your guys' mindsets, because it's like, I think there are so many people within this business, not even within this market, but like within this business, that whether they get comfortable and they don't want to evolve, and or it's just like they are doing something for a long time and they don't appreciate like what they have been able to accomplish and what they have done. And I think sometimes it's so important to take a step back and celebrate. And so I'm glad that you guys are going to be celebrating this month your 1,000th show. I mean, you deserve everything coming to you. Congratulations.
Man, I appreciate it. Appreciate it.
I think we love the responsibility we have in the privilege we get to be a part of people's lives, because we're on in the middle of the day, and there's a reason we didn't move to mornings. There's a reason we didn't move to traditional afternoons. It's because there was really no reason to. And when you have people who are at work, or they're working from home and they have multiple screens and they're just watching along or listening along, like, we know that helps their day go by faster, and they help our day go by faster by being engaging and fun. And we get frustrated at work just like everybody else do. And Casey and I had a moment on Saturday that I pointed out, was like, you know, every time I get frustrated, I think of, and I pointed to someone that we had just spent like 30 minutes talking to. I think about people like that. We get to be in that person's life, you know, every day, even when we don't know it. Like, we didn't know that person was out there listening, but they came to tell us like, no, I can't call every day, I can't text every day, but I'm listening. And that's a big deal. That's a privilege.
And you know what? Just to add to that, like, I know that not every day is like a great day. You know what I mean? Some days, like, I love what I do. Some days it feels, you know, it's a job sometimes. And that's okay. That's what we do. There's days when I know Damien is frustrated with me for one reason or another. There's days when I'm frustrated with him for one reason or another. We got separate lives, things outside of our jobs frustrate us or whatever. And, you know, I get at 12 o'clock, or I'm 11:55, and I'm like, man, how am I going to talk for 4 hours, man? Cause I'm not feeling it. Like, I'm not in a good mood. I'm not feeling the energy or whatever. And I can honestly say, every time I felt like that, not even by the end of the show, probably like an hour in, like, it's all gone. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I'm having a good time. I'm talking, I'm laughing. And that's special. You know what I'm saying? It's a show that is able, at least for myself and maybe Damien, to change our mood. You know what I mean? And that's special, man.
Yeah, because it's obviously you guys and Jesse, but it's also the Chatty House. Like, it's a legit community. And I think that's what makes it so special, is when you have a show that's not just like two people talking about sports talking at you.
Yeah.
Like, they're talking with each other. They're talking with you guys.
And you even talk about like all the challenges. It's like that. I think, and Kenny, I think you and I being the basketball players here, I'm kidding you guys. It's truly like that team atmosphere. Like, you're not always going to get along with your teammates, but like your teammates, you're trying to go for the win every single game, every single day, all the time. And you're going to feel all the feels, and you're going to have all the other things happening in your life, but find that balance, focus, and then feeling fulfilled at the end of that game, at the end of that show. And I think that is like the most important part, whether you guys, like we were talking about this with the, like Matt George and like Brendan and Frankie the other day. And we were talking about how, like, God, like you, oh, yeah. Wait, are we not?
You know, one of those names.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, wait,
those
what?
Are my boys.
Oh, wait,
those, are my, those are my boys. No, those are my boys. It's love. It's
no,
love.
And like, we were just talking about like how, like, doing this stuff, like, every single day is such a challenge. And like what you guys do, it's so impressive. And yeah, I mean, just again, coming on to that number of 1,000 is just wild to think about. So I'm really glad to have you guys here, you know, to kind of give us like 1,001 right now, making you talk more right now. But don't worry, it's not going to be for 4 hours with us.
It's all good. It's all good.
Can we also talk about Damian turning into like Damian Sharania this
season?
Oh, well, I mean, yeah, I mean, it is what it is.
Well, and to be fair,
it is what it is.
To be fair, Damian had Malik Monk too a couple of years ago too.
He did. He had it before Shams.
But what I'm just, Damian, like, does it feel kind of good in those moments to like, I'm just being honest, like in those moments, and you're beating some of the big guns, you're getting ahead of them.
In the moment, no, like it's not fun at all. When it's over, it's amazing. Yeah, yeah. But in the moment, like it's terrifying because you're getting, you know, a lot of information. And I felt really good. I felt really good about what I had with DeMar. But you just never know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I was trying to get navigation. I was trying to get confirmation through, you know, certain sources or certain people, and I wasn't getting it. And I wasn't getting so that it was really, I think it was the Saturday morning. Like I tweeted, I was just sitting there and I was like, you know, he's coming to Sacramento. Like, you know, like you absolutely know.
Yeah.
He's flying to Sacramento. Just tweet that DeMar DeRozan will be in Sacramento today. So I tweeted it. And then Shams and Chris and those guys, I think, just happened to tweet it 4 minutes later. Then I was pissed. Then I was like, okay, they got this. I feel like I know where they got this from. So that's when I just started hinting at everything I knew without actually saying it. And I knew I wasn't going to be the one to tweet the final tweet. Like I knew that because I just knew. I knew I wasn't going to be the one to have that. So I was just kind of waiting for it to get out there. And I had a few tweets ready, but it's something that I think is good for us. It's good for me and Casey.
Absolutely.
Me and 1320. But like in the moment, it's pretty terrifying. Like the Malik thing was terrifying. When we broke that Malik, we had the number, we had everything. I was scared to death because I was like, what if wrong? Like, what if something happened? Like, we had never broken stuff like that before. And the only other story we broke was the De'Aaron Clutch story, and De'Aaron confirmed it to us. So it wasn't really a big deal. So yeah, it's a little, it's not my water. So it's a little, it was a little scary.
Yeah, reporting is.
I don't want to be wrong because it had gained so much momentum.
You don't want to be that guy either, because then all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, this radio guy in Sacramento knows what he's talking about.
Yeah,
and then you get shit. But it's like, no, guess what?
Yeah,
you're right. So, hey, Kenny, take me back to when. I mean, obviously, you guys were hearing stuff, but once it was like official, like, oh my God, DeMar DeRozan's here. Like, he's showing off the jersey. He's here. Or, you know, going back to the California Classic, he's at the game. Yeah. You know, what was
exactly
that?
As Deuce Mason predicted, by the way, not like us.
What was that? Like, not reporting, just like, oh, this would be funny. Just there.
Hey, look, our wrestling minds just work all the time, dude.
It works. That's life. Always works through the lens of professional wrestling.
You've always said that, and like, it's true. It's very true. But going back to that night, were you? Because I mean, you're a Sacramento fan. I felt like it was surreal to me. It was like, wait, they really got DeMar DeRozan. What was going through your mind that night?
Man, the funny thing about it was I was out of town. I was in Baltimore at the time. I had a wedding to go to. So, you know, we're getting everything ready for this wedding and this trip that I'm on with my wife. And, you know, Damian is hitting us up like in a little group chat, like, man, this is what I'm hearing. And, you know, we're breaking it down. It's like, man, it sounds like he's coming here, but I don't know. You know what I mean? And I don't know what it was. Like, I was on Twitter, you know, I'm connected that way, but I felt so far away. Like, I felt like I was just so far away. Yeah. I really was, but it just felt like, damn, you know. And then to a certain degree, when I saw D'Lo was at the Classic, I was like, damn, man, I'm leaving him out there alone, man. You know what I'm saying? I should be out there regardless of what happens. If it goes good or if it goes bad, yeah. You know, I should have been there. But we got some, he was relaying some information to us maybe an hour before, and it just kind of all made sense. And I was just like, yeah, I think this is going down. And when it finally did, and you know, he comes out there and the crowd goes crazy, and songs playing and all this other stuff, it felt like a moment. You know what I mean? It felt like a moment. It felt like a really big deal. And I didn't think about DeMar DeRozan being a big deal in that way beforehand. But the last 48 hours before he signed, it was like, oh, this is, I mean, to be honest with you, we're talking about a Hall of Famer. You know, we're talking about a Hall of Famer that's choosing to come to Sacramento to try and help this team get over the hump, man. So it's a really big deal for this franchise and for this city.
Yeah, even when you put it like that, I think that's, it's so fun to hear, especially because so many people that haven't even been to Sacramento want to shit on Sacramento. By the way, that's something that like I'm trying to do a much better job of too, of like when people say like, who would want to live in OKC? And like, as much as I would love to just like shit on it, I'm like, no, you don't know. You know, there could be something cool. Like,
yeah, we know.
You know. We know.
No. We know. We don't want to. We don't want to live in OKC.
Yeah, no. Yeah. No, Kenny. No. No. My point is, no. We're not going to talk shit unless we test it out, and then we know that we don't want to live there or even be around. But like that gets talked about so much with Sacramento, and I know all of us love this city, love this community. And so then when a future Hall of Famer does like choose to be like, yeah, I want to play there. Whether part of it is the city, whether part of it's for Mike Brown, the culture, the money, all the different things, whatever, it happened that way. And so that's why, like, when it does come to DeMar, I'm super excited, not just about him as a person, but on the floor, you guys, I know he just turned 35 years old. You're seeing what he's doing in the Drew League. Yes, it's the Drew League, but like, I mean, can we say like he is aging like fine wine, his game as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, did you see what the 39-year-old did today? Did you see what the 36-year-old did yesterday in that semifinal game? Like, that's a, like, it, you know, age is, when you got guys like, you know, obviously referring to LeBron and Steph, and, you know, DeMar DeRozan obviously takes incredible care of himself, not just because he's 35 and he's playing professional basketball, but look how much professional basketball he plays. Like, 35 isn't the same number for everybody. And DeMar is showing that he's one of those guys who, you know, there aren't columns written about him spending $1.5 million on his prehab on his body and all of that stuff. But he's clearly a guy just by his resume who takes care of himself. And so, yeah, it's perfectly fair to say he's aging beautifully. And the fact that he at least in my opinion, obviously still has several good years ahead of him, it's really exciting for Sacramento.
Aging like fine wine, man. I agree with you, Morgan.
Yeah, and there's so many people talk about fit, and you know, we go back to that ESPN story that came out week where they had the survey, and it was like, hey, it was one of the worst trades of the offseason. I'm like, what? How do you even say that? But when you think about
that,
the
31 pick swap, boy, watch out.
Dude, I just don't. I'm not even denying that the 2031 pick swap, could it end up being bad down the road? Sure. I mean, but like at some point you have to take some risks, and we don't even know what the hell that class is going to be like.
Yeah, that's like D'Lo and Casey.
No, actually,
episode at that point.
Yeah. Well, we do know what that class is going to look like. We were on the show. Well, and we went down to class of 2031. I think they're in sixth grade right now, but we went down there. And then we named some of them names. And I'm going to tell you right now, you don't want to miss out on some of them names. So I understand Bond Tips. I understand that sixth grader in Texas. I forgot his name. I think his name was Ken Norman. That's a bad boy.
You know what's sad is that there's really like a list of like the top 50 for like the class of 2031. Yeah, that's real.
Yeah. No, we were reading it on the air. Hey, I saw the class of 2035 today on Instagram. They're in the first grade.
Hey, there's
who puts these lists
there's
together?
There's parents out there that will pay some good money to get their kids on that list, and or there's just people that want to push out a narrative right away, and that's what happens to these kids, and then just puts a lot of pressure on them and makes their life a living hell growing up in sports. You know, it's a great. Great, crazy. Great atmosphere that we live in, of sports culture that we live in for the youth. But
it's the King's tax, though, the 2031 pick. Like we in Kenny brought this up first on the show, where it's like, okay, they're getting killed for having a pick swap 7 years from now. If the deal didn't go through because of a pick swap 7 years from now, they would have gotten killed for it.
Yes.
Be insane. Can you imagine that story came out? Like, hey, the Kings were closing on DeRozan, but they would not do this pick swap with San Antonio. Be like, what? Run it back?
In 7 years.
Let's go again?
Do a pick swap in 7 years.
And, like, how many times have we talked about, I think, with this organization, too, like, the almost trades, whether it's Pascal Siakam or if you're even talking about Kuzma. Or I mean, go down the list. Go down the line. And I always bring up the Siakam trade, the almost trade, and I always go, you know, they waited so long to try and do something with Pascal Siakam, so they missed out on everything else. And then what you saw with the Kings, at least in this offseason, they said, screw you, Lauri Markkanen and the Utah Jazz. We're not going to wait. This is your deadline. We're going to move on into something that we believe can still make our team better. And then look what happened with, you know, Utah Jazz, Lauri Markkanen signing back with them, everything. It's you got to make sure you are taking risks, even if it means a future pick like that.
Yeah. No, and that's the truth. I mean, Monty was feeling some of the heat, you know, as he should. After running it back last year, and I didn't have a problem with running back. I got it, but you didn't make the playoffs. You missed your goal. So now it was time to do something, to be aggressive. And I kept saying on the show, and you know, maybe other people didn't agree, and I understand it's a bottom line business, but I was like, I need you to be aggressive, Monty McNair. And if you're aggressive, that's what I'll remember. I'm not going to, you know, if you're aggressive, say, for instance, DeMar DeRozan thing, you're patient but aggressive, you know what I mean? You got DeMar DeRozan. If he goes down to 15 points per game, the Kings are the 12th seed and it doesn't work, I can't knock you for how it turned out. Especially if I'm demanding that you do something. You did something. All right, you did something. I hope it works out. I know sports is a bottom line business, but if everybody was demanding do something, he gets credit for that, for just getting the deal done. So I like the aggressiveness. And like I said, there was also a level of patience in there as well. Like there was a moment where, you know, he could have went crazy on draft night and gave Washington whatever he wanted. But, you know, he felt like he had another deal or the potential for another deal to be there for him for maybe a little better fit. And I think DeRozan is like, for this offseason, I think he's perfect for what this team needs, where they're at, and where they're trying to get.
Yeah, and I think the knock is, well, they didn't fix, you know, from the outside looking at people say they didn't fix their issues. I'm like, well, they did fix some, right? Like, they didn't fix maybe getting some big, long, rangy defender. But how many times were we watching the Kings last year going, dude, who else is going to go get a bucket?
Yeah.
Especially when Monk went down, you're looking around, it's like, it's Fox, that's it. And to have another guy that can get a bucket, get to the free throw line, who's just such a crafty scorer, can score all three levels. I think it's going to make this offense a lot better. I think it's going to make everyone's life easier, especially De'Aaron Fox's.
I think that's a point that a lot of people who talk about this team in defense or wings or length or whatever fail to recognize is how bad things got when Malik went down. And I always try to point out, like, it wasn't just Malik that went down. It was Kevin Huerter that went down.
Yes.
But when Malik goes out and you just, you know, you wipe out your depth chart at that position. But when Malik goes down, you've eliminated a playmaker. And it got to a point where it was very clear that the Kings' opponents looked at them like, there's one guy who can attack. One. So if Keegan beats us, is Kenny always says, like, if someone else can do it. Like, if Keegan beats us, Keegan beats us. He's going to have to show us consistently that he can do it. We're not buying into that. Cut off De'Aaron Fox, because right now they have one playmaker. Like, create a shot, do everything on his own. They have one, and it's De'Aaron Fox. And the, like, their whole offensive structure went to hell when Malik Monk went out because no one bought anyone else as a playmaker. Now you have three, and that's a huge deal. Now you have two that are probably always going to be on the floor in any combination of De'Aaron, Malik, and DeMar. So that's a huge deal for this team. So why it doesn't address, oh, the Kings defense, which is going to be written about, I guess, till freaking eternity. But it
hey, which is to me, and like, I'm not trying to deny that there, you wish you had a little more size up front. I'm not denying that, but like, That's team,
a yeah, sentence that you're gonna think about later. Well,
God damn it! God damn it! This team last year,
a little more size up front is wild.
You don't have the flags with you, do you?
No, yeah.
I'm just waiting for Jesse to pop in randomly, yeah, and just right. Throw a flag. So, no, he does not have. If he's got a flag,
hold on, man. I think I got a flag. Hold on.
Oh, no.
Stay hold in on. The office.
I think I got a flag.
No, you never know.
Oh,
there it is. Deuce has been flagged.
Oh my God.
I deserve
it's
it. Even I'll take
worse.
It.
Just by, it's just worse because it's like later and like, you know, we've been now it's just the sophomoric humor is just way worse.
Yeah. And I'm like, it's like toward the end of the night. So I'm like, not like in my head, I'm yeah. not even, I'm on, now I have to be on edge a little bit. I could have really think about what the hell
yeah,
I'm talking
will
about.
Ruin okay. the ability to put yeah. together.
But your point,
the
your
defense.
Point.
Yeah,
shall you go? The Kings yeah. lack some girth. They like some size.
Well,
but anyway, the point I was trying to make is like last year, the jump they made defensively on the season, but like especially once they put Ellis in the starting lineup, it's not like they had a whole bunch of defensive stoppers out there. And their defense, once that happened, took off to another level. So I actually think this team's going to be better defensively than maybe they get credit for. And even DeMar, I've been watching a lot of his defensive possessions. And I'm surprised at how often he's defending bigger guys. OG. I saw him like defending Al Horford against the Celtics, Miles Turner at times. Like, he'll take on some bigger guys in defensive matchups.
No, that's facts.
I was worried about that.
I had the defensive matchups. You heard that?
Play on is just what I say. Play on. I agree, right? Like, so. Everybody would love to have the Boston Celtics, you know, type yeah. of lineup where you got five, six guys that could defend at a high level, but that's just not realistic. You look at the Kings, though, and just what I think is going to be the starting lineup with Fox, I think it'll be Monk, DeRozan, Murray, and Sabonis. Well, Murray and Fox, you got two top-flight defenders. You got two top-flight defenders. And then when you get a sub in there and Keon comes in there, now you're talking about three guys. You got three guys that I believe can have all defensive team capabilities. Like, I don't know if they'll ever reach that, like, get that award in their careers. But I think Keon Ellis has all defense-type potential. I think De'Aaron Fox should have made it this year. Although the 10 guys that were named, I didn't have any knock with any of them. They're great defenders. But I think Fox is on that level, and Keegan Murray has grown leaps and bounds on the defensive end. So, you know, I think, and then you got a guy like DeMar DeRozan, like you have probably seen in some of the film that you watch. Is he Kawhi Leonard? No, but he's a guy that understands the game.
Yep.
He understands team defense. He understands being in the right spots and things of that nature. And I'm agreeing with you, both of you guys, man. I think their defense is going to be a little better than people are giving it credit for. I really do.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, and under Mike Brown, what were you going to say, Damian?
Well, I was going to ask you a question because you guys have watched Keon in multiple leagues. What would you do? Because Deuce reacted a little bit when KC said Malik it too.
I was surprised. I wondered if that was more wishful thinking from Kenny than actual like reality. I think they view him as six man. They like him coming off the bench. They like him leading that second unit, bringing that juice. And how many times last year they had opportunities to go that route when you really felt like they needed to go that route and they didn't.
But then who's your starting five? You got a pistol on there.
I kind of think he's going to start Herter. I mean, I think he might just. And I know that seems like, wait, what? What? After last year? It's like, look, I don't think Kevin's as bad as he was last year. He's a good player. Good playmaker. And I think the one area that maybe Mike would like is, oh, he's 6'7", just having some more length out there, even though he's not a great defensive player. I think there's a shot at that. And maybe he's got to earn it. But I think Keon is probably the next guy, I'm guessing. But I do like the idea of Monk coming off the bench. And maybe it's because I don't want him getting lost out there with that starting five. Like, I want him coming off the bench with the ball in his hands, making plays. And if you're out there with DeMar and De'Aaron, is that a little more challenging?
Because here's something, you guys. And this was in that ESPN piece, one of the angles that was brought up that I thought was a fair thing to bring up. And that was, what is this going to mean for Keegan Murray if DeMar is taking way more shots, blah, blah, blah. And now let's say we have this world where Malik Monk is in that starting lineup as well. And we know what he is as a playmaker. Yeah. We know what DeMar is as a playmaker, but also, we've seen Keegan be passive. Or in year three, are we seeing Keegan be more aggressive, more empowered by his teammates, just ripping the ball away from them and saying, this is my effing shot? Like, what? I mean, when you guys read that angle, what did you think about that?
Well, there's a couple things that went down right there. I'm going to backtrack just a little bit, and then I'm going to get to that more, too. I love Keon Ellis. He showed me something, you know, that last stint with the Kings. And like I said, I don't say this lightly. I'm not just speaking in hyperbole. I think he has the ability to be an all defensive player type of guy, like Alex Caruso or something. The one where I really had that epiphany, I guess, is when that Memphis game, when he had Desmond Bane in a torture chamber. I mean, he was giving Desmond Bane problems, and that's a guy that has the size, you know, he's got the ability to shoot, all this other stuff. And Keon, he had him in like I said, in a torture chamber.
I thought you were going to talk about the play-in game when he had Steph in that too.
No, he did that too. I mean, we saw what the man did in the semifinal game. We know Steph still got it. I've never seen Steph pick that clean in my life. Yeah. And what Keon did in that first half, but Damian brought it up on the show when it happened, and it's kind of lived rent-free in my head. The interview that Monty McNair did during the summer league, talking about Keon, where he was kind of just like, yeah, Keon did a good job while people were out, and it was good to see that. Like, it was cool. Kind of like, that was nice. He'll go back to his normal role when those guys are back, but that was nice. We appreciate it. Then Keon... I disagreed with it, but Keon played damn near in the Summer League championship game. I said, why? If he's your starting two guard, what the hell is he doing out there? So all those things I think about, I don't think he's going to start. Yeah. I do understand what you're saying with Herter. I think Herter might end up getting that starting nod. I would go with Malik just because, you know, I'm ready. I'm ready for the Kentucky connection. I'm ready for Dame and CJ 2.0. It's time. It's here to have that. But to Mo's point, I would normally be worried about Keegan Murray getting lost in that shuffle.
Yeah.
But I hope that time with Malik Monk out, because when he was out, I said, I need at least 18 shots a night from Keegan, at least.
Yep.
And he delivered. Yep. He delivered pretty much the entire time. I think during that final month, he might average like 16, 17, 18 shots a night. And I hope that experience is something that he'll transfer for not only next year, but the rest of his career, where it's like, hey, I'm one of these guys. They need me. You talk about the playing game, the way he was aggressive and hitting in that game, swung that game. So I'm until I see otherwise, I'm going to believe that Keegan learned from that experience and he's going to be ready to go. He's going to be ready to be aggressive.
I think one thing people don't bring up when it, in regards to Keegan, and specifically you talk about that ESPN article, is what if it takes a little pressure off of Keegan Murray?
Yeah.
What if it allows Keegan to play a little bit more freely? Because not only are you getting a 20-point per game scorer in the lineup, not only are you getting a, you know, a likely Hall of Fame, you're getting a vet. Like, you're getting a guy who could help guide. You're getting a guy who could help steer. You're getting a guy who could do a lot of different things. And no one ever brings like that point up. We all create these like fictitious timelines of what we think a player or a team should be and what their growth should be on a year-to-year basis. And Keegan grew last year from year one to year two. And there's no reason to believe he can't do it again from year two to year three, but it might look a little bit different with DeMar DeRozan around. And that could be beneficial for Keegan.
I'm with you, Damian. That's what I see it as a positive in so many ways, because I keep thinking about the vet empowering this guy to shoot the effing ball, to take it to the rack, to do what you need to do. And seeing the jump in his game, being able to put the ball on the floor more last year, create his own shot. And then can we see even a little bit more of that, especially if positions are changing a little bit, if I mean, whatever the starting lineup may look like. I don't know. I think, but I'm with you. Like, I think it could be one of those more special things rather than like a negative thing that people try to portray.
I think he's going to get better looks too. I'm sorry. You got to go deal with DeMar DeRozan out there too, and De'Aaron Fox and Sabonis. Last year, Keegan was getting challenged more. There was no doubt about it. Right. You know, they were not giving him as many clean looks. So I think he's going to get better looks. I was joking about this with Morgan a couple of times. I said, we spend so much time talking about the starting lineup, knowing Mike Brown, he's going to do some crazy and like start McDaniels in there. I mean, we saw with Casey Akpala, right? And then last year during training camp, it was Duarte. Like, is it going to be McDaniels? Oh, I need a long defender out there.
Mike gets escorted out of town if he does that. Like, no, okay, it was funny. Like, Casey Akpala started three games and then, like, literally never played basketball again. Like,
where is he?
It is an absolute.
Is he still with us?
Oh my God.
Why have you heard anything about Casey?
Maybe he's just, like, not someone that's on social, putting his work up on social. Let him live. Man. Let him live.
Oh, man. Poor KZ, man. Come on, man. Come on, KZ.
Damien had to double check. He's looking. He's like, wait.
Yeah. He's like, got to make sure we're not talking shit about someone that. No, I'm not even going there.
He's not dead. He's. I don't know that he's anywhere else, but he's.
Yeah. It happens.
Shout out KZ. We love you, big dog. Yeah. What's up, boy?
Yeah.
Things like, and that was a magnificent three games that you played. You know what Kenny and I started talking about last week, though? You brought up Kevin starting. Like, I think Kevin would be really good off the bench. I think only because, like, if he's starting, like, you have one position, you have one job when you're the starting two guard. But if they move him to a bench role, I think we could see him at the three maybe a little bit more frequently than we do. You know, obviously he could still be at the two, but I think it opens the Kevin Herter playbook a little bit as to what you could do with him.
Yeah, and I'd be cool with that too. Obviously it's all about defensive matchups, whatever, but I think, you know, there's going to be some bad matchups for him. It is what it is. It's a regular season too. The guy does other things out there.
Tatum about that.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
Tatum.
And you know, with Herter too, I think he was shook after at start of last year. I think like going in the camp, he's probably walking in the camp. Think about it. The previous year, what a year. The beams being lit all the time. You get to the playoffs. It's magical. You win 48 games. The best offensive in NBA history at the time. And you walk in the camp and you go, oh, yeah, Chris Duarte might be starting the next game. What? I was a starting shooting guard. I was here. I was hitting big shots. Like, I know a bad series against Golden State, but
it wasn't just Mike Brown, like, hey, you know, tough love, like you got to play better defense. It was like, I mean, obviously it was real. It was serious. Like, no, I want to start this game off strong defensively, you know, with someone that's going to get after it.
And so you could see why that would maybe shake him a little bit. And I think going into this season, he shouldn't be surprised by anything. Like, yeah, you may have a chance to start, but you're going to have to battle.
Will you guys be surprised by anything?
I'd be a little surprised if Kevin started.
Okay.
Not that he doesn't deserve it or whatever the case may be. It just seems, I talk about this all the time, and we don't mean this in a personal sense, but Mike just don't seem to like the guy. so after Kevin,
he doesn't seem to like the player.
Yeah, like it's not a Mike Brown type of guy. And that you mentioned it, he was ready to put Duarte in instead of him. Like, what the hell are we doing here? You know what I mean? So I would be surprised after getting DeMar DeRozan, seeing what Keon Ellis did, signing Malik Monk back, that Mike Brown would say, man, we're going to go back and start Kevin Huerter again. Just because I don't think he doesn't have that type of connection to Kevin Herter's game. Now, you mentioned what happened at the beginning of last year. We've said it numerous different times. Mike was wrong. He played that wrong. Like, he played that way wrong. And he might, and we love Mike Brown. He hasn't played a lot of things wrong, but he played that one wrong, and he might have messed up Herter for the whole season with all that nonsense. And whatever he chooses to do with Kevin, whether it's start him, come off the bench, he needs to find a way to make sure Herter is locked in, accepting the role, and almost put his arm around him. Like, even if he feels like how we speculate, like, I'm not really feeling this game, he got to make Huerter feel like, hey man, it's good, bro.
Believe.
You know, let's go do this.
I love. I love that. But Kenny, like, I'm just a little bit here too, though. When we say that with Mike Brown and screwing up Kevin Herter's, you know, mentality a little bit, like, as a player, like, even a player that's in their prime, whatever, like, you're going to go through growing pains, and you got to work on how you figure that out mentally. And I think the great part about Kevin Huerter is that it did screw with him in his game at first, but I do feel like there was a little bit of a mental shift. I don't know if it was like even more so after the injury or just more so after the trade deadline, understanding like, you can just be thrown away. Like, you got to play your best basketball out there. Otherwise, I'm only going to I'll value you as a human being, but not as a basketball player on my team. I don't know. I just think, like, I'm about tough love, but I'm also about, like, what you're saying, like, putting your arm around someone, making sure you have that balance, find that balance. But, like, I feel like if you're not one of the star players on the team, be ready for anything thrown at you by a coach.
100%. And it's on, and I say all that also saying it's on Kevin Huerter to get whatever was the issue last year. You got to get past that. You're fighting for minutes. You're fighting for not necessarily a roster spot, but a spot in the rotation. And whether it's the three-point shootout, whether it's the playoff series, whether it's Duarte last year, like, you got to get past all that. This is a production-based business. And if you're not producing, nobody cares about why you're not producing. True. You got to get it done. And that's one of the things that I worry about when we talk about Kevin Huerter coming off the bench. Because I agree with Damian. I think he'd do a lot of good things off the bench. I think he could – I mean, we've seen it in Atlanta. He was a really good guy off the bench and was very productive. But if his mind's not right, because he's worried about starting or he's worried about all this other stuff – he can find himself getting no minutes real quick.
Yeah, and I think when you fall mentally behind, it's really, really difficult to catch up.
Yeah.
And I'll use the example of, like, anyone who's ever, like, set a weight loss goal, right? Like, I'm setting a goal weight of getting to 160 pounds or whatever it might be, and you work and you work and you work and you work and you light the beam and you finally get to that 160, but then you fall back a little bit and say you get to, like, you're at 163 and you know you're fine. You still look the same, you still feel the same, but that number really gets to you. And then all of a sudden, when you fall like a little bit, like, everything starts to spiral and you can find yourself going to 164 and maybe you ate bad this day and you just wind up falling back to where you were. That's what I feel like happened with Kevin. Kevin would have like a great workout week where his weight dropped and he looked like everything was good. But then he'd have a game where he missed the show, missed a couple of shots, and things would spiral for him, and he'd fall back, and he'd fall back into bad habits, and things would happen. And it's such a, in both of those situations in the game of basketball, like as we're talking about with Kevin Herter and in this fictitious diet situation I created, it's all mental.
Says yeah. Fictitious. Sounds like you could, my mental state, but go on.
But it's true though. Like so much of what you do physically can be hampered by where you're at mentally. And so that's true. Not just, I mean, most, like every trainer will tell you that, every dietitian will tell you that. It's no different in professional basketball. Like you can get in your head in the game. Of course, great players like Casey and Mo wouldn't, but like that.
Oh,
just keep shooting.
I'm just a head case,
head case over
on
here,
the blacktop. I mean, said,
hey, thanks for helping get us to the playoffs. D'Lo's gonna start today. Like that's terrible. like what?
Oh my god!
It gets because maybe I have more of the attributes that the coach like. Can't imagine what those would be. But now it puts someone in their head like it doesn't even make sense. And
yeah.
Just start this spiral of things going bad for you. And that's why I'm glad. I hate the way the season ended for Kevin.
Yeah.
But I've used this analogy with Ja. Like I think the best thing to happen to Ja's getting a fresh start. Ja Morant is getting a fresh start this year. All of the suspension stuff is behind him. He's starting with a clean year because of that injury, and he can just be a basketball player again. I feel like Kevin Herter can do the same thing. You can put all of that stuff behind you, regardless of what your role is in Mike Brown's new version of the Sacramento Kings. You could put all of that stuff behind you and get a fresh start this season.
Last thing for you guys. The dust is pretty much settled in the West. It seems like I don't think any crazy moves are going to happen at this point. Maybe
not
something
now.
Happens, but it okay. Seems like it is what it is.
Yeah.
Based on what we know, like what are your expectations for the Kings? Like what would be really disappointing to you? Like what do you want out of this team this year?
I'll let you take that one.
Well, I've said it from the Monday or Tuesday after DeMar signed with the Kings, and I'm standing on business. I don't feel no different. I say the floor for this Kings team is 52 wins. And I look at that as being a top four seed. I'll say top 4 to 5 because, the West is going to be tough. But top 4 or 5 seed, guaranteed top 6. And I don't feel any different a month later. Yeah. 52 wins is the floor. Is the floor.
Yeah.
I feel pressure.
When we talked to Matt George about this, I liked what he said. He's just like, get to 50 wins. You get to 50 wins, you're in. You're in. It's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if you win 50 games, you feel good about being top 6. That's interesting. Damon, what about for you? Where do you think for this team?
I don't
team
really have a win total for them. I think they're 50+. I do see them as a top 6 team. There's a handful of teams in the West that a lot of people love that I'm unsure about.
Ooh, like who?
I need to see it from Minnesota again.
Ooh. Okay.
But, you know, like I was that way last year, too. Like I didn't like there was a lot of hype about Minnesota going into the year. And it was just like, yeah, dog, show me. And with them last year, it was relatively quick. It was like, OK, like I get it now. Like I see it. Like this is a good basketball team. But at the same time, I'm looking at them like there's still a couple players I don't believe in. Like I really believe in Anthony Edwards. Like he's that dude. I'm going to need y'all to show me one more time. I think Oklahoma City is really good. I don't buy Dallas.
Ooh.
Man, I like their moves. I like Najee Marshall.
No, they
man.
Did. No, they made some solid moves this year. I this team feels better this year than it did last year. I think last year was, you know, that was, there's nothing wrong with this, but they overachieved last year. Like they weren't that good.
But don't you think the experience will help this team though grow that they this roster that they have though?
No.
Okay.
No, just because I don't buy that works all of the time. Okay. Like Kyrie is experienced.
Yeah.
Luka, you know, maybe not NBA wise, Luka's a championship player. Like he's played in, you know, massive games. I'm just really unsure about them. Jason Kidd went from a joke of a head coach to a really good head coach for me in one singular season. That's not a stable way to think about somebody. So I'm going to need to see you guys do this a second time. I don't understand why the Kings struggle with the Pelicans. The Pelicans look like at times last year they were one of the best teams in the West, and other times they just look like ass. And so I can't buy into them either. I think the Lakers kind of are what they are at this point. Yeah. I think the Warriors kind of are what they are at this point. And so I expect, you know, and the Clippers are probably going to be a team that falls back. I don't think Phoenix is much different than last year. So, yeah, I expect the Kings to be in that mix for the top six. I expect the Kings to finish top six.
Denver is the one I'm interested in, too, because, man, losing KCP, and I know it's the Olympics, but, man, did Jamal Murray look rough. And it's not just the Olympics. I mean, if you want to go back to last year, I don't know if the injuries got him or what, but he doesn't totally look the same. And they keep losing guys every offseason and not replacing them. I'm like, I don't know. I mean, they're going to be relevant because they've got Jokic. I get it, but I don't view them at this point as a championship contending team.
Jamal's another player, Casey, that I don't think matches the way that he's talked about. Like, I think he's good, but sometimes he's talked about like, oh, he's one of the next top guys in the league. Like, I don't see that in Jamal Murray.
He needs a supporting cast.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and not to say like, I mean, this is a team sport. It's not a bad thing to like play better with a supporting cast, but at the same time, like, yeah, I hear you on that. It's like when we talk about the Nuggets, we're talking about them being still a good enough team probably because of Jokic. Same thing with the Warriors. Mm-hmm. Like, we talk about them being a good enough team because of Steph Curry mostly. It's like when you have those players as individuals that are that good, they're going to take whatever they have around them. Where if it was just Jamal Murray, I'm with you.
Jamal Murray, he's had some major moments in the playoffs like that. And I think that's what gets people like really excited and like, yo, this guy could be next. But he's had some major disappearing acts as well. I'm with you, Deuce. I'm not going to say they fall out of the top six, but I think this is a team that you may see them at 4 or 5 this year in the Western Conference when you talk about Denver. I'm just not so – the team that I'm also not really – I don't want to say I'm not sold on their playoff team, their top four team, probably top three team or whatever – but I need when people talk about OKC, I don't see them the same way.
Ooh.
Like, is everybody like, this is their conference. They the favorites in the Western Conference. I don't know, man. I still like Minnesota a little bit better than OKC.
Kenny brings the drama. OKC,
they got some things they got to work out. I mean,
I just look at them now and I'm like, I just think Chet's going to be better this year. I think getting Hartenstein is nice.
I really like Chet.
Chet's really good. SGA is really good. And I just think defensively, it's like they just have so many defensive weapons. And they were number one last. I didn't think they were going to be number one last year, and somehow they were the number one seed in the West, which is insane.
Well, it's because the Nuggets. That's why. Like in the 81st game of the season,
it was that tight.
Story to how Oklahoma City became like they weren't number. Weren't the Celtics.
That's fair.
Yeah.
But they were. You know, it's you can't take number one away from them. But there is a story to how they got that seed.
So the thing I think about with OKC that I just want to see, this is what I'm talking about, I want to see. They had really good additions with Caruso and Hartenstein, but that's going to put somebody off the floor at the end of the games. Like, are you going to, you know, go with Hartenstein and Chet and then maybe be a little less likely to switch and have the defensive flexibility and that you had last year? Caruso, great defender. Is that going to be enough to spread the floor for SGA and Jalen Williams? And Jalen Williams, who I think is really good, he struggled in the playoffs.
He did.
So I there's still a couple of questions I want to see rotation-wise. I think moving on from Giddy was a good move, and you get somebody like Caruso, that's going to help. But we talk about the way the Kings looked when Malik Monk was out and not having another shot creator. I think OKC had the same problems. In that when you got into playoff times and at the end of the season when SGA was really the only one and maybe Jalen Williams were really the only ones that could get you a bucket. And you didn't really address that. You got better from the people that you have with Caruso over Giddy and Adam Hartenstein, but you didn't really address that shot creation problem that reared its ugly head late in the season last year.
Dude, I can't wait for this. I can't wait because the Kings should be legit this year, and I think around the league, people are probably sleeping on them a bit. That's fine.
I even saw
like the Vegas over under was like 46.5. I'm like, that's interesting. I mean, they won 46 last year, and they weren't that great. You know, like, I feel like
they're
better.
Give me the money.
Yeah. By the way, I'm so late to that trend. I just saw that today.
I said, this is what they do. Like, you know, Steph Curry and his family did it.
What?
And I'm like, then the last
Curry one was funny. I thought the Curry family one was funny.
Yeah.
They're so simple, but it makes me laugh every time the person doesn't know what's going on. It is funny.
Give me my money.
Did you see the Idris Elba one?
No,
number one was funny. He has these two daughters. And they do the give me the money, and then Idris does it, and they don't do anything. Oh, what the fuck! That's so good.
Oh my god!
And it's Idris Elba, yeah. Like the picture of cool in 2024. Oh, it's so great.
You guys should do it at ESPN 1320 with like some, oh, and then some like
you do it with him. He would have no.
Oh,
idea.
Oh my god! Do it tomorrow. This won't come out right tomorrow. Just do it tomorrow to him. That would be amazing.
That's a good idea.
The content I'm waiting for, guys. Let's go.
Seriously, we appreciate you guys doing this, especially after a long day of work. You guys are the best. Congrats on the upcoming 1,000th edition. And dude, you'll get the 2,000 if you want to.
Yeah.
So
that's the plan, man. Hopefully.
I want to get to 1,001 at this point.
Hey, look, 1,000 still ain't guaranteed. There's about a week and a half left.
Could you imagine?
Who knows what happens?
We cut that whole part out of this podcast. We're like,
okay. Tracy looking at us like, if you hoes can't sell that food sponsorship, you need to call this whole thing off.
Oh my God, you guys. Well, no, seriously, thank you for taking the time with us. We love talking to you, and hopefully we talk more too as this season comes up. So congrats. Thank you. You're the best.
Thank you, guys.
Anytime, guys. Anytime.
Deuce and Mo. Deuce and Mo. Deuce and Mo. They tell you what they know. Deuce and Mo. Deuce and Mo. Deuce and Mo. The podcast that you know. Deuce and Mo.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame.
Two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly, beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.